She started out in local news in Waco, Texas, and now is a national correspondent for CNN traveling the nation. We have CNN's Natasha Chen this week on Anchors Away. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Anchors Away. I'm Sarah Threadgild, along with Robert Burns, former TV news anchors who now basically just people watch and comment on it on this podcast. We this week are joined by a very special guest, someone that I actually used to work with, and she is now a national correspondent for CNN, Natasha Chen. Natasha, thanks for joining us. I'm super excited to have you on. It's been a while since we've been able to catch up from our days back in Waco, covering, gosh, just about everything here in Waco, including Fort Hood, which brought some pretty interesting stories that we can go over. But yeah, I'm excited because I want to hear about your life now. It's got to be just amazing.
Well, first, thank you for inviting me to have this conversation. I'm so happy to hear from you. It does seem like a million years ago that we covered Central Texas together, and it does also feel like a very different life as well. Not just for us personally, but also for the nation, I would say, in the past decade plus.
Definitely. So tell us a little bit right now about what you're doing. I know you travel a lot. I follow you on your Instagram and love seeing where you're at, because it's almost like every day you're in a new place.
Yeah, so I do travel for stories. I'm based in Atlanta currently, and that means that sometimes I'll do stories out of Atlanta, but a lot of the time it will be covering things that happen throughout the Southeast region of the United States. So my job is specifically a general assignment, and it's more regionally dictated than, for example, the correspondents in our company that have beats. I am just, you know, covering the breaking news and the big stories of the day in this Southeastern region.
So my question for you, Natasha, because you're at a point where in your career, Sarah and I never got there yet, or had never gotten there, at least to this point. We could still change our minds, who knows? But you're at this point where you're kind of living out of a suitcase. My question is, do you have certain luggage you take with you? Do you have a preferred overnight, like a little carry-on? Is it a larger one? Do you carry the hairdryer with you? What is in the to-go bag when you're sent to Alabama or Florida
I love this question. You imagine you have to be able to pick up and go to the airport really fast when something suddenly happens. So you're generally going to be pretty packed most of the time. Now, most correspondents will have a carry-on bag ready to go at all times near them, either in the trunk of their car or at home or at the office pre-COVID, so they could just grab it and run. I have a slightly different tactic because, but depending on the type of story you go to, you could need very, very different things. You know, you could be covering a hurricane versus covering a, you know, George Floyd protest, mm-hmm. or covering a, you know, a big decision at some state's legislature. Like the clothes you're going to need in those three different situations are going to be different. So I constantly have the essentials packed, and they're always ready to be thrown into a suitcase. So in the corner I'm staring at right now, I've got the ever ready toiletries bag that always has like 2 weeks worth of contact lenses in it. And, you know, all of the hair products and whatever I need that after every trip, you have to make sure they're restocked, right? So that the next time you're not like frantically searching for it. And then I have the ever ready sort of undergarments bag, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then I have another small pouch that's got essentials in the field. So for example, sunblock and biofreeze, if you suddenly get like a spasm or something, and like Advil and like, you know, hand sanitizer, especially during COVID, wipes, like all those types of things in one bag ready to go as well. So stuff like that gets thrown into a suitcase with whatever appropriate clothing I need for that story. The great question about the hairdryer, like hotel rooms generally all have them, but as I've recently discovered in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, when I was covering the Andrew Brown killing, the particular hotel that I was at, their hairdryer kept shorting out on me. So ever since then, I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring my own just in case we have some circuitry problems.
Certain things you just can't skimp on. And hair dryer is one of those obvious choices that, you know, you need to take with you. I mean, and for anyone listening, yeah, these are the hard questions I'm going right into right off the bat, because we're investigative journalists here and we're all going to dig down to the deeper issue, which is how much do you love bouncing around hotel to hotel?
Yeah, well, you know, you make light of these questions, but honestly, if your hairdryer didn't work that day, the first thing that people were going to notice when you go live on the air mm-hmm. is not what you're talking about. It's why does your hair look like that today? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous, but unfortunately, because we're a visual medium, these things ultimately matter. How much do I love bouncing around hotel rooms? I do like staying in hotels, especially when they're nicer. We've become, a lot of us who travel, who are field correspondents and field producers, especially the photojournalists, the camera guys. I mean, we've all become Marriott ambassador status, which mm-hmm. is the top published status that you can have with Marriott, which means there are a lot of nice perks for us when we are not working. If we were to go on vacation with our families, we can use those points that we've accumulated. You know, mm-hmm. that is a really nice perk. The part that sucks is coming home and doing laundry, honestly.
That's the part that sucks after every workday.
I mean, yes. And we have to be careful about not leaving, you know, dirty dishes in the sink mm-hmm. after when you're running off to a story. So a few things that have to happen in the house before I jet out.
Yeah.
I mean, to make sure.
They could be, 2 weeks if you don't take care of
them. Oh my gosh, that would be disgusting. Like you could gather, you know, you could gather insects and rats by that point. So I have to make sure that the dishes are clean. And I do try to power down everything that I should power down just to save on energy. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the hotels are nice. It's just
the status is nice, I bet, for sure.
It is nice. And the airline status as well. Mm-hmm. Some more than others. The photojournalists, the PJs, as we call them, have some of the highest airline and hotel status in our company, because they do travel so much more than we do as well.
So let's talk again about perks of being a CNN national correspondent. Again, Natasha Chen with CNN. She started out local in Waco, like the rest of us, and has worked her way up. And I want to know about this particular perk, because it was a perk I was always asked about in my days of TV. Do you do your own makeup?
Ah, yeah. So the answer today is yes. And that is because of the pandemic.
Okay.
When I got to CNN, I had done... Oh, I'm going to do the math now. Actually, Sarah, you and I both started in the Killeen Bureau, right?
Yes.
So I actually was in a satellite bureau away from the main Waco newsroom. Not only was I doing my own hair and makeup, but like we had like one small tiny mirror in that office.
Yes.
To like make sure that we were TV appropriate. So I started that job in 2009 and then joined CNN in 2017. So in between that time, so 8 years or so, I was in local news, and in local news, for the most part, all reporters do their own hair and makeup. I have actually heard of some anchors in some local markets that have the money that they've had professional hair and makeup artists do theirs, but that's pretty rare. Most of this, like all the stations I've been at have never had that service. Like you do your own stuff in the bathroom. Okay.
Exactly.
And so there's four people huddled up next to each other with that one very bright bulb, just making sure you're starting to sweat just enough before you got to go out.
Or you're in a live truck using the visor mirror to try to patch up before you go live.
100%. And you sometimes, if it's breaking, like you're doing the eyeliner and the lipstick, like as the live truck is bouncing along, right?
Yeah.
So it's, that was rough and tumble. I got to CNN. And the first day I got there, they apparently had to take my, profile headshots for the website or something. So they did my hair and makeup and they walked me into the makeup room. And I was like, oh, you're going to do this for me? They're like, oh, honey.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Honey, you're in the business.
They gave you the oh, honey. Oh man.
It was amazing. I love our hair and makeup artists because this is all pre-COVID. We had a team in every bureau that CNN is in. So every city that CNN is in, there's a hair and makeup team. And they do such a great job. And the cool part is that once you've decided that this is the look you're going with, and these are the colors and tones, and this is how you're going to do your hair, they have a profile for each on-air talent person, and everyone, no matter where you are in the country, if you're in the system, they can see those specifics. So if I do a story out in LA, or if I do a story in New York, and I don't know those makeup and hair people, they will go into the system and say, oh, Natasha's profile says this, that, and the other. And they pull those numbers and those colors.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. Which is super nice. And another reason why that's important, not just to make you all look good, is because while you're sitting in that chair, that's another crucial for women, 45 minutes, hour, whatever, yes, to prep the story, to be on your phone and to be reading in and to be writing something. A lot of us sit there in the makeup chair with our laptops. That all changed during the pandemic where we went home. You know, we're in the field now. Makeup and hair is still done for anchors at this point. We still haven't brought back the entire service for field correspondents, which means I am trying so hard. I'm trying my best in the field. Some days it works out better than others, but honestly, the thing that I miss the most is not just their wonderful skills, but that time that I got to prep the story that is now lost. Like I'm now spending about an hour doing hair and makeup that I'm not able to be on my email or writing.
That makes sense. And one thing I love about you in particular, and I think, you know, maybe more national correspondents can be doing a little bit more of this, but you give us a glimpse on Instagram and social media of the behind the scenes. So, you know, we get to see a little bit of the life of a CNN correspondent. So for someone in, you know, the news industry, it's really exciting. It's really fun. Now you, as you said, you started in Waco, but you've been to several other cities, Seattle being one of them.
Yeah. Seattle and, Memphis in between that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So which, city wise, Natasha, which was your favorite?
I know I'm going to offend somebody somehow. By
there's no way for her to, I'm just sitting here shaking my head. There's no way she's getting out of this answer unscathed.
It's gotta right. Be the Waco Killeen Market, right?
So I'm just going to own it, and the flat can come if it wants to, but I loved Seattle so yes. much. And I, for a few reasons, I spent the longest amount of time there mm-hmm. of all the markets. I spent 4 years in Seattle, and I'm a West Coast girl. Like I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and the Seattle and San Francisco cultures are just a lot more similar. And I got really involved in the Seattle theater community and the mentoring and volunteering communities in the Pacific Northwest. And I loved that, you know, the city was surrounded by the Puget Sound, like lovely waters, and this amazing, you know, snow-capped Olympics and Mount Rainier, like year round, just, it's so beautiful. And really great people. I enjoyed the work there. I probably could have been convinced to stay, honestly, in Seattle.
And that's where you jumped from Seattle to CNN. Is that correct?
Right. Yes.
And some of our former coworkers from Waco were with you in Seattle. That seemed
that's
to be
right. You know, that's so funny. I ended up being at the same Seattle station with Henry Rossoff and Rob Munoz, both of whom worked with the two of us at the same time at KXXV. And it was so funny. Like Henry and I started in Waco one part from each other. Like I mostly didn't work out of Waco. I worked out of Killeen, but that very first, like, what do you call that? Orientation day. Uh-huh. I walked into the Waco newsroom and Henry and I were both sent to shadow someone for the very first story. And then Henry and I landed at the same Seattle station just a few months apart. And then after that, Rob Munoz came over. So it, I think Robert and I were discussing this earlier. Like it's just such a small industry. Everyone is connected to everyone else in some way, shape, or form.
Exactly. And you mentioned it. We stick out like sore thumbs. And once we realize you are in the industry, we make a point of it to say we were also or are also, we get the struggle. We were in the industry as well. We know what's going on.
Getting the struggle. And that's right. But I would assume, Natasha, things are a little bit more smooth now. You're not really necessarily dealing with some of the maybe quirks that you deal with in smaller markets, especially in TV news.
I think that this, what I'm about to say, is true for any industry. When you get to bigger leagues, the struggles are just different. Mm-hmm. There, you're dealing with different challenges than you were before. And yes, some of the quirks that you're talking about in smaller markets, they are definitely non-existent or much smoother at this level. I think what you're talking about, prime example, the day that the Fort Hood mass shooting happened, November 5th, 2009.
Yes.
I was the first person to go live on scene, but I was not the first reporter on scene. I was the second one on scene. And the only reason that I became first live was because we got there with a live truck. And this is back in the day before LiveU. And yes. LiveU, of course, is like this basically a giant cell phone thing that can broadcast, right? Mm-hmm. So before we had that technology, the only people who could go live is were people with a big microwave truck, and you would have to lift up, you know, raise the mast up in the air.
Which took a long time.
Took like 15, 20 minutes just to set that up. It also made it very difficult to break down and leave if you had to in a heartbeat.
Pressing that button for like 15 minutes.
Right? Your thumb would get tired. Gosh. And then, so that worked in my favor, but what didn't work in my favor is that our station, Sarah, did not at the time give us IFBs, at least not for me. I did not have an earpiece.
Oh my God.
And the reporter who had gotten there first, she did have an earpiece. So by the time she was able to go live, she actually had a much smoother time reporting from the scene and ended up doing a live shot with a national newscast.
Yes.
And I learned after the fact that I could not do it because the national network found out that I had no way of hearing their anchor or responding because I had no earpiece.
Which is just silly. I mean, because really all we needed to be provided was some earplugs, you know, like some earbuds.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And imagine this, like covering the entire day unfolding after a mass shooting, not knowing what our anchors were saying to me.
Yes.
The only way that I knew how to talk when it was my turn was my camera guy being on the cell phone with the booth back in Waco and then giving me a signal to start talking. Was I going to say something that the anchor had just said? I would have no idea. So little problems like that in very small markets with, you know, budget and technology, like these are no longer issues that I have to deal with.
So for people out there who don't, you know, for a little bit more context, again, we're talking about, you know, the Fort Hood incident, which happened in 2009. I was also working in a small market at that time. I know exactly what you're talking about in terms of not hearing the anchors talk back to you. We had in Lafayette, Louisiana, we had our photographers have a cell phone. And they were Nextel phones. So, you know, the beep beep, the really good ones. They had the cell phone and the photographer was on the actual line with the producer,
yes,
giving you the finger point, like, go wrap yeah. it up or yes. cut it out. And I remember if there was any situation where they wanted some back and forth, those questions were pre-scripted. You know, yes. you had to send in like, I know this answer, tell the anchor to ask me this. And then you get the finger point and then not the finger, you just get the finger point and then you then give out your answer. So it was a very different time. But the reason I bring that up is because this was also in 2009. The reason we didn't have those earpieces yet is because it was the digital transition for television stations. You know, either your TV mm-hmm. station was over the air, you can get through rabbit ears, or you had to go through the box, the DTV box. So some of those signals in the smaller markets cost a lot of money to switch over. They weren't there yet. And so we were stuck looking at, you know, some angry guy who's probably hungry, giving us a point to say talk. And then we don't know how long we got to talk for.
Oh, can you imagine? Yeah. I know there's reels somewhere with just all these awkward moments where I didn't know I was on air or I answered the question wrong, or, you know, there's so many things about local news that I look back on, and especially with, you know, talking to you two, it's camaraderie. Like, we all been there. We've all done that. We've all had these experiences. So I think it's really cool to be able to talk to you, Natasha, because you are getting to live that life that frankly, Robert and I only dreamed of. And, you know, I know.
Well, we dreamed about it until 30 hit. And then I don't know about all that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I still to this day, like, and that's one of the reasons we do this podcast, is we love TV news. We miss it. This is our way of kind of keeping our, you know, foot in the door, so to speak. But, mm-hmm. You know, I'm so happy when I see my former coworkers who are doing, you know, so well in the industry, and several are in like New York City and in Houston and Dallas and some really great markets. So I'm super proud and I'm super excited. And, Natasha, I just want, you know, what's been your favorite story that you've covered? I know you've had some really crazy things happen, especially during the pandemic. I know for one story in particular, you were on a beach when something horrible was said to you on air. So, I mean, you've had some crazy stuff happen. What's the most memorable, I guess, of all the stories that you've been covering since you've been with CNN?
And memorable is a much better way to phrase that question. And
you say I think favorite, because I know
this right. And here's the thing: it takes other news people to know that that's how to phrase it. Because you both know what, when someone asks you what's been your favorite story, you might have a favorite, but it's they're all different, right? And mm-hmm. a lot of times they are very traumatic. And so how can you call something traumatic your favorite? Like, it's very
exactly.
odd. But no, I mean, in terms of certainly the incident you're referring to is memorable in the sense that it was the beginning of the pandemic about a year ago, when, you know, a lot of people, there was still so much unknown about this virus. And there are certain pockets of the population who wanted to blame it on China and pretty much all Asian people that they saw. And that's kind of the interaction that I had. As you know, and can guess, it kind of comes with the territory now. We are in a society where a lot of things are hostile. A lot of topics are hostile. Even which news network you work for, it becomes a problem, and it can oftentimes lead to security and safety problems for us in the field. Yes. And it was just the other, I was working this past weekend on a story, and some person drove by in a truck and said something both vulgar and racist at me. So it's just, it comes with the territory of being public, right? Yes. Having people see you, whether it's see you in person working on the street or see you on TV. And it just somehow gives people this, it emboldens them to make it feel like perhaps they feel okay to say these things just because you have chosen a platform that where you can be widely seen. I don't know. It's a strange psychology. But to get back to your question, I think the most memorable, just maybe within my time at CNN, Parkland was definitely a memorable story. Unfortunately, these days we cover a lot of mass shootings, but the Parkland one stood out to me because those Marjorie Stoneman Douglas students were unique in a way that they were not afraid of approaching us. A lot of times victims and survivors want to stay away from the cameras, but they were not shy. They showed their raw emotions. Whether they were angry or upset, everything was laid out there and they were real with us. And I felt that authenticity with them. And so that was a very memorable story. It was hard to digest as well, I think, because they were young and we saw how they were, you know, teenagers trying to process this.
And teenagers also, angry, rightfully so.
Yeah.
This is just happening, you know, way too often. And that's the thing, you get to be the mouthpiece for, you know, really important issues going on in our society. And that's a big undertaking. That's a big responsibility. But I definitely know you can handle it. You're a Stanford grad. You've just got this class and way about you. And I'm just super proud of you. I really am, Natasha. I just am so excited for, you know, where I can see your career going.
I really appreciate that. And I would be remiss without mentioning also memorable, this just happened in the last few months, but the Atlanta spa shootings were really huge for us too. Mm-hmm. Just because that happened in a place where CNN was founded, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of our crews are here, and to be called to that story, especially as an Asian American, like it's one of those things where you're trying to get facts first and get the basics and the nuggets out to people as responsibly and as fast as you can, while also processing something that's personal too, that hits personally. So that happens to every reporter for different stories. And I think that's the challenge. That's the downside of this job of being around people on the worst days of their lives, but also an incredible responsibility. So when it's done right, it does feel good that it was done right.
Exactly.
You kind of reinvigorated me to go back into new, I'm not going to, but you kind of reinvigorated
Let's do it,
Robert. Me. I like
Let's
my weekends.
Back.
And
I was going to ask the two of you, you said like you love doing this because you miss it. What do you miss most?
You know, I think it's the adrenaline rush. You know, it's one, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what that situation is. You don't know what your story for the most part is going to be that day. You mentioned you could be at a hurricane. You could be at a trial. You could be, you know, at a St. Patrick's Day parade live, or you could be doing, you know, a puppy was stolen. You just don't know. And part of what I miss too is meeting people, which I know we're going to let Sarah jump in here for a second. We'll wrap this up. And I have a meeting people question for you that we'll use for bonus content in a few days after we release this episode. But Sarah, what do you miss?
Oh, goodness. I miss so much about it. There's so much I don't miss, but
there's more you don't miss than what you miss.
Exactly.
I hear you.
I could go on and on and on. And Robert and I, you know, we talk about that in our podcast because there's so many things about local news that's just so crazy. And it's such a weird world to be in, really. But, you know, I miss feeling like I'm part of history in a sense, because like you said, it's a responsibility to share the news. This is a job that I think journalists, you get into it because you have a passion for it. You have a love for it. You have a passion for that First Amendment, like that, you know, you just have this love for it. And I think to me, that's what I miss the most, is just that complete passion that I had for my career and what I was doing. Not to say that I don't have that passion now, but it's just, it's different. It's a different feeling. It's a calling, I would say.
All right. Well, we have a calling to come back. That's a horrible transition, but we have a calling to come back in a couple of days to do a few minutes extra bonus content with Natasha Chen, CNN correspondent. You can find her online, follow her, keep up with her behind where she is. Natasha, see, I'm doing it now. Yeah, Natasha Chen, CNN on all the platforms is what it seems like. Thanks so much for joining us and spending some time this week.
Oh, this has been so fun. I love reminiscing and talking about, you know, the behind the scenes stuff. This has been fun.
All right, that'll be wrap it up for this week's episode of Anchors Away. I can't talk anymore, so obviously we're done here. We'll talk to you again in a couple of days for the bonus content with Natasha Chen.